Well, happy Wednesday, everyone. It's Joe Varnador. We've got Mr. Kevin Moore is co-hosting the show today as well. And we've got Mr. the Seattle Flash, Mr. Larry Gill.
I like How it.
How are you guys?
We're doing good. How are you, Joe?
Good. You like that name, Larry? The Seattle Flash?
I'm not sure, you know.
Larry. I'd say go with it for a while, and we'll all be at the summit. We can all discuss it at the summit to see if there's some options. But I like the Seattle Flash right now. Let's go with it.
Over drinks. Yeah. We'll discuss it over drinks. Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, guys. And I'll have my Superman T-shirt on up under my shirt so I can show you my big S.
And we're segueing.
I said big S for Superman. Hey, guys, okay. Enough monkey business, right? So we've got a few things we want to go over today, or you guys want to go over today, actually. So let's see. John's not going to be on until about 1:30. So you guys want to let's go ahead and cover, is it the asset 56581 that we were just talking about, Mr. Moore?
That is correct. And Joe, one of the over the past couple of weeks, we've had a lot of students sending questions in, just talking about discount and yield and different ratios. And so this morning I went through Notes Direct and I brought this asset up just because it's a great teaching asset to look at the note itself, the unpaid principal balance, the purchase price of you know, I mean, titanium, I think it's 27.2, and just kind of walk through this and see how by looking at a note like this with a deep discount on it, it really opens up what you can do. Number one, if you just bought it as a buy and hold note, what kind of yield you'd have. Then if you looked at, hey, could I sell it as a whole note? Or is it something that may partial? And so I figured we'd just go ahead and use this one. And as always, let's get some questions bantering back and forth here on the board.
This was the one we were just talking about prior to getting on the call.
Yep, this is the asset we were just talking about before we got on the call.
And I want to do a shout out to my friend from Harrisburg, Mr. Paul Chase. It's the first call I've been on. Paul's on, so you met Paul in Raleigh, Kevin.
So, yes. Yeah.
Very good guy. Yeah. All right. So, and one other thing that we've talked about in the past, but of course we've got a lot of new students on over the last few weeks as well. And, you know, there's three different ways to price an asset as far as three different schools of thought. And, of course, the first one is going to be based on yield. And that's the one that, you know, that everybody looks at as far as what they want to buy it for. They want to buy it at a 13, a 14, a 15, a 16% yield. Mm-hmm. And then the second obvious would be an ITV quote. And then the third would be as a percentage of the unpaid balance.
Correct.
So, I don't know, do you think we should talk about those for just a minute before we jump into this asset as to how each of those affects something that we're looking at? You think that would be beneficial for everybody, guys?
I think talking through the ITV is a great topic, because I actually fielded two questions on that yesterday, and so
let me just throw this out there, and we can take questions on it throughout the call if we need to. Of course, we're all familiar with taking our financial calculator or the quote software that we have, and we're going to put in all of the information as far as the interest rate and the number of payments remaining and what the current payment is, and we're going to do all of that. And so then we're just obviously solving for yield. So we can buy an asset if we want to make a 20% yield or a 13% yield or whatever. But here's the second piece of that, really, is buying a note based on investment to value versus buying off of yield. Sure. So let's just suppose that we have a house that sold for $100,000. The borrower made a $5,000 down payment, so you've got a $95,000 first mortgage on that, or first, you know, whatever it is, trust deed. And the interest rate on the note is 12%. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, and let's just assume that it's brand new. I know we wouldn't buy a brand new unseasoned note with, you know, that kind of thing, but we're just using this as a scenario. So if you wanted to make a 12% yield, Kevin, you would buy it for $95,000, right?
That's correct.
Because it's a 12% note. If you wanted to buy it at a 14% yield, then it maybe would discount down to $90,000. But here's the challenge: only buying based on yield. We've also taught you that we don't want to be into any transaction more than anywhere from, in some cases, 65 to maybe 85% of investment to value.
Right.
So if we bought that loan, if the house is worth 100, you got a $95,000 remaining balance and it's at 12%, well, you can say, well, I bought it $95,000, I'd have a 12% return. Mm-hmm. But you would also have a 95% investment to value ratio.
Right.
And we probably, based on that small down payment, where do you think we should be as far as ITV, Kevin? Would we be at 70, 75, since it's a small down payment?
I'm gonna tell you that I would say let's just stick with about 75. Just to be
75.
Yeah, because right now here's what we know and here's what we don't know. We're using this conversation as all things being equal, and we're going, all right.
Right.
If we're making some assumptions, you know, 75-80% would be normal, and until we had more information, we wouldn't necessarily want to deviate too much from that. So 75 or 80.
Right. So yeah, so if we then bought it at the 12% yield, and by the way, the payment $95,000 for 30 years at 12% would be 968.85 or thereabouts. Mm-hmm. But that would then, the dilemma is we're at a 95% investment to value. So if we want to be in this at 75%, then we've got to discount this, or we could pay no more than $75,000 for that loan. So I wonder, Kevin, what it would take to get this down, what yield it would take to get this down to a, it would be probably a 16%. Yeah, so it would be about a 16% yield to get us to a 72.29% ITV investment to value.
Sure.
So what I'm saying is, guys, and Kevin, you can give your spin on this as well. So what I'm saying is, yeah, you're looking at a yield of 12%, and somebody may buy that for 12%, but if they do, they're in it at 95% of value. And what Kevin and Larry and I are saying is you don't want to really be in it more than 70 to 75% of value. So we would have to we would need to still disc this and earn a 16% yield, so that we would be below the investment, below 75 investment to value. Did that make sense, Kevin? Or if you've got anything to add, please feel free to do so.
So, Joe, I like the way you explain it. It does make sense. And from kind of a, as I said earlier, from a, all things being equal, if I'm just looking at this from a blank sheet of paper, that would be my first initial, that'd be my first initial spitball. Then what I would do is I would go back in and I would start reevaluating my variables based on other things. And so, Joe, one of the comments you just made was, you know, you said, hey, unseasoned. So now what I would do is I'd start looking at, okay, what does the impact of seasoning have on my risk tolerance in terms of, you know, have they made 1 year's worth of payments, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years? And then because of that pay history, am I willing maybe to buy a little higher as long as it doesn't put me into an unacceptable yield threshold? And again, Joe, you showed us how basically buying it at par, you're at 12%. Are there people that will say, listen, $95,000. I make 12% a year on $95,000. That's all I care about. I'll take it. Boom, and they go from there. So again, as you look through the variables and you do your due diligence, you want to adjust those a little bit and never treat one variable as the absolute deal killer, because you'll miss out on deals. All right. Okay. All right, Joe, did you mute yourself?
Larry, no, okay. Yeah, I couldn't. I lost my audio there for a minute. Don't know what happened.
Whoops. All right.
I didn't hear. Is it you having trouble hearing?
Yeah, you're a little bit in and out.
Okay, I'm at home today. Let me change locations here real quick. So go ahead and talk.
Okay. Let's see. Alan, you popped up. Alan popped up a question regarding the BPO where there may be a discrepancy in the size of the lot, where it may say 1.21 acres versus 0.28 acres. A lot of times what I'll do is I'll go to the tax cards just to verify, because as we all know, mistakes do get made. The other thing is there's times where they will split the parcel, where they'll have, they'll have kind of the parent and the child, where the house may sit on a quarter acre, and then it's got a 1 acre lot next to it, and they just added them both together. So I'm going to go ahead and I'll verify that. And a lot of times tax card's best way to go.
Okay. So is that better?
That's much better. What'd you do? Did you put a new hanger on top of your hat to get the internet better?
I did. Hey, you're one to talk here, buddy.
I
think it's paid his internet bill.
Yeah, once I switch from the wooden hanger to two metal hangers, man, I'm good. I got that high speed internet now.
Yeah, that's right. And Lisa asked you, did I say 65% to 80% ITV? Well, it could be 65% to 85% ITV. Mm-hmm. And again, especially because I get questions all the time, Kevin, about, well, somebody wants to sell their house, how should they create the note, right? Well, obviously, the first thing that we want them to do is make sure that it's SAFE Act compliant. So, that's the first step. The second step is we need to make sure that, that they've got decent credit. Third thing is that, and if the less their credit score is, the more you want to get as far as the down payment goes. And then the third aspect would be, okay, what interest rate do I charge them? The fourth thing would be what term? And obviously, the higher the interest rate, the lower the term, the more value the note is going to have long term. So, based on all of those different areas, and then, of course, we have to also make sure, as part of it being SAFE Act compliant, is that whatever the monthly payment is, obviously, is that they can afford it, right? It doesn't matter so much as far as what the credit looks like. It's more as to, can they afford to make that monthly payment? So I get those questions all the time. And again, we just have to remember that when we're selling a house that we want to sell the note on, typically you're going to be in it at 70%, more than 75%, ceteris paribus, all things being equal, as you said. So we then have to look at it and say, okay, then what, if I'm going to, sell a house for $100,000 with $15,000 down, max ITV would be 75% or $75,000. So then how do I create that as far as if I were going to sell that? And what yield could I expect to get out of that? So anyway, just a question, just to kind of throw it out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and Joe, to your point, the CFPB, the number one driver, they hold everybody up to a standard, which is basically ability to repay. So don't structure a loan that the borrower does not have a high rate of, high probability of success. So if you're putting all kinds of crazy terms in or trying to do funny things to cram the borrower into the house, it can be more problematic. So,
all right. Well, as we both know, it's not, we can make our own credit decision, But it's based on the simple fact is that can they afford to make the payment, as you said. So, all right, so let's move on. So the questions here, the one from Richard and then the one from Alan, while I was momentarily blacked out there, did you guys answer those questions?
So I have answered Alan's. We talked about that one, and Richard's. We'll go ahead and we'll get through here as we go through the call.
Okay, good. All right, so we're going to work on that asset that we pulled up here. So let me change my screen. All right, so talk us through it, Kevin.
All right, and so, Joe, what we really want to focus on is really the kind of the math on this deal. And so with this asset, this was a loan that was modified, and when they did the modification, the principal balance on it was $52,599.43. And the interest rate was 7.75% at 345-month amortization. And it was modified back in 2002. And the loan will pay off. Yep. The assuming that the people stay on a regular payment course and are not prepaying principal down, et cetera, this loan will pay off in about 14 years. So there's about 166, 167 payments left.
Gotcha. Do you want to look at the BPO before we pull up my quote spreadsheet on this, or you want to?
At this point, I just soon focus on the math, and then let's go back and revisit the BPO.
Larry, hand the screen over to me.
Okay.
Don't do it for free, Larry. Charge them.
This is going to cost you, Joe.
Okay. Oh, you want it at Summer Summit.
There you go.
All right, show my screen. All right, why isn't it showing my... Oh, because I'm not... Yeah, anyway. Here we are. Okay, so you gave me these numbers a minute ago. So we've got $32,000 is the current market value. As you said, I just plugged in $53,000 as the selling price, $52,599 is the remaining unpaid balance, 7.75% interest, $345 number of months remaining, or it was AMMed out at $345 during the mod, $380.75, 178 payments made, $167 remaining, and an unpaid balance of $39,000. Kevin, I think this has a little bit of seasoning on it, doesn't it?
Got a little bit of seasoning. When they did the modification, the first payment was due August 9th of 2002. So we're kind of chugging along here.
Yep, for sure. Yep. Okay, so let's do this. So the price on that is
27.2
is what. So it's selling at about a 47%. I mean, a 14% yield is what. Colonial is selling this asset for, correct?
Correct. Yep. Plus or minus, using the numbers that we have in front of us, you're at a plus 14% yield.
Right. Okay. Good. All right. So we're going to take this other stuff out there. Okay. So 27,932. Now, guys, the reason you see all of this red right here, as far as the ITV, is because they owe, well, let's see, the property is worth 32 per the BPO. You're paying $27,000 for this house, for this note on this house. So you're showing
right.
An 89%.
And Joe, let's take just a quick minute, and we will go back and kind of take a look at the BPO. But let's take a minute and let's talk about this, because what you did is your filter automatically turned red because it exceeded a certain percentile.
That's correct.
Right. Some people would have automatically killed this deal and said, okay, because it was over my, whatever I'd set my ITV filter at, I'm out. Now, they're out on a deal where the people have been in this house almost 20 years. There's about a 15-year pay history on it. There's almost another 15 years to go, and buying it as is, you're at a 14-plus percent yield. This
right.
is where, when you look at the variable, you go, is the BPO a problem? The answer is not really, because, number one, the BPO is about a year old. Number two, How important is that compared to a payment history? And again, this is where we're throwing these out so that everybody gets a better handle on being able to evaluate a deal and also not, not kicking a deal out too quickly.
Right. And I got to
And
re-upload this stuff there. So that's what I'm talking with on the screen. So
right.
I just got
And at these kinds of price points, if your BPO came in at, say, $5,000 more now than it did a year ago, or $6,000 more a year, what would that do to your BPO filter? If it came in at exactly the same, what would it mean? If it came in a couple grand less, at the end of the day, we're looking at a performing note, and we're looking at what do we do with the cash flow on a monthly basis to turn this into a profitable deal, whether you're buying it for your own portfolio or you're buying it as something that you want to go ahead and resell. And we'll talk about the various ways to resell this thing and how you make some
Exactly.
money with it.
Okay, I'm just having to redo the thing here, so go ahead.
So the unpaid principal balance was $52,599.43. 7.75, Joe, on the interest rate.
Yep.
There you go. Term
Okay.
was 300. Term was
345.
345. Yep.
Okay, and the payment was 380.75.
380.75, and it'll tweak. It's off by about a hair. It's okay.
And so they've made 178 payments.
About 178 plus or minus.
78, and no,
Oh,
that's
you got
got left.
278 there, Joe.
178, and then we've got 167 remaining,
Yep,
and the
plus or
balance
minus.
is 30. What was the balance?
Figure 39,000. We're going to round it a little bit.
Okay, so 39. Okay, so. You want to, what do you want to look at first on here? You want to look at, let's
I mean, if
see.
you so
You want to look at partial, you want to look at the, you
if
want to
you
look at the time schedule.
what I'd like to do is kind of go, all right, let's look at this as if I just bought it for myself to put it into my portfolio, and then what could I do with it from there? So if you buy this as is, you're buying an asset that's going to have about a 14% yield on it.
That's correct.
All right. So if I've got a cash flowing asset sitting in my portfolio with 14%, is that a good problem or a bad problem?
Think we could all agree that that's a good problem, right?
Correct. So then what I want to do is I want to go to the next assumption, which is, all right, what do I want to do with this deal? Do I want to turn this into a fast deal, or do I want to go ahead and maybe do kind of a hybrid deal? And for today, what I mean by fast deal is, suppose I just want to go ahead and I want to sell the note, just sell it as a whole note. And because you're buying it at 27 and you've got about a $12,000 spread in the discount, I mean, you're buying this at a significant discount relative to the principal balance. Could I go ahead and just sell this note at a higher price and an acceptable yield to somebody, take my money and go to the next deal? So
And Kevin, this let me throw this in there. So, we talked about at the beginning looking at a yield quote. We looked at you looking at a ITV quote, and this one is really what brought us to this is we're looking at a discount off of UPB.
Right. Correct. And Joe, thank you, because here I'm more concerned about how do I leverage the discount off of the UPB instead of worrying about, is the house worth 32 today or is it worth 37 today? Because I'm looking at a performing note where I want to make money off the cash flow. So with this one, you look at it and go, hey, could I go ahead, buy it, and then resell it for 31 or 32 or whatever, pick a number, and make some money, and then go ahead and do it again. Or
So Kevin, if we sold this based on the 167 remaining payments, based on a 10% rate of return to our investor, we would sell this at 34,263. Sure. So we paid 7 for it, right?
27, yep.
And we would sell it at a 10% return, and that would give us, what, $4,000 and $7,000 in profit if we, you know, as a fee for selling this just the way it is.
Okay. I'll take that deal.
Okay.
Now.
All right. So let's change it to a 12 year. So if we sold it, we said, look, guys, we told our investor, look, guys, look, see. $39,000, but it's got 167 payments remaining. They've made 178. I'm going to go nuts and give you a 12% rate of return. Now, you know, the current BPO says 32, but it's probably worth. And you know what we could do as well is you could see really what this would rent for in that market, and that would give us, you know, your buyer a better indication as well. But you know, you can kind of see how playing with the numbers, I mean, based on that, you'd have about a $3,000, $3,500 profit, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it, Joe, if we lowered the yield to the investor to, say, 9%, again, we could potentially make a bigger slice on profit if we did it that way. What I want to also look at is in terms of I'll call it the hybrid plan, is there a way to possibly partial this and then keep a part of the tail for myself?
That's exactly right. Or obviously we could go in and look at another play, which would be selling off. So what do you say? We sold 90, paid that 167. What would that do for us at a 12% return? Okay, so we would be there. Would we want to sell it at a 10% rate of return?
Sell it at a 10. Because that's an awfully strong number.
Okay, so and what our goal is here, guys, is we want to at least sell enough payments to get our investment back. So we may have to sell 120 payments. We sold 120 payments, then I think the price on the note is $27,000. So you know,
you're good.
27. So we've got an $1,800 spread here, and that leaves us 47 payments on the back end. Mm-hmm. Or we could go up and say, what would you say? We'd go crazy. Let's do 137 payments and leave ourselves 30 payments on the tail, on the back end. Right. So now we're up at $31,000, which is, $4,000 is a fee now, and then 30 payments on the back end.
Right. Now, Joe, take it to a 9% yield.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I want to do that is a lot of times you will find that, and I know there are students on the call that can speak to it, what they're finding out is, you know what, if you're going in at 7 and 9%, investors are very, very comfortable with that number. They're not looking for necessarily...
Skeptical.
Yeah, they're like, wait a minute, that doesn't seem right. Yeah, I'm happy with 7 and 9.
Right.
And so here.
Yeah, we're at 35, but then if we even did it at an 8, we're then up at 34. So what we could do is drop our number of payments that we sell on this thing back down, and so we keep 47 payments. So it just depends on what kind of cash do you want up front. Do you want $4,000 up front? And 47 payments, or we could sell 137 payments, and you know, we'd get 4 and 3 is $7,000 up front.
Right.
So, and, you know, really depends on what the goal is of the person that's buying it.
And so what you also have to remember is when you're looking at what Joe is doing, where he's manipulating the numbers, he is showing you how to basically create your own capital. So how to create your own bank using starting out with your capital, and then by buying the notes and then using different strategies to resell them, how you can go ahead and increase your buying power.
Right. So this is no different, Kevin, really, than wholesaling, wholesaling a house, right?
Sure. What
I
you're
mean,
doing is you're
flipping a house. You're getting it under contract for one price, so you get it under contract for 27, and then you're selling it a partial on for 34. So you're going to take the difference between your buy price and price that you're selling the 137 payment partial on in this case, and then you're holding on to 30 payments on the back.
Sure. So with really how you kind of look at this is the spread you make is really it's a way to make fee income, but
Right.
then also keep some of the back end for yourself.
That's right. There
Okay.
you go.
And so
Let's see if we
there
have questions on this.
yeah there's number of payments don't match. Richard, there's a little bit. I did not drill this thing down. I didn't match up all the pay history, so we may be off 1 or 2 months. It's just like the interest rate was off by like 1/100th of an eighth. So when you go back and do your due diligence, just double check everything. Also, when I gave Joe the starting loan amount, I may have been off by $100 or so because there may have been a fee put into the loan mod that they added to the balance. So again, what we want to do is walk you through this and make sure you are focusing on the strategy that we're teaching today, which is if you can know how to look at a note and look at the value of the discount, plug your yields in and then massage your yields to create different pricing scenarios, you can generate fee income and then also create some passive income, some passive wealth for yourself. Or, and again, remember, what we're teaching you here, it works whether you're doing it right now in what I call your active money, which let's just say you have $30,000 to invest, or you've got, say, $30,000 in your IRA or an HSA or 401k or whatever. So again, the principles we teach you work in both scenarios. It's just a matter of which one is better for you.
Kevin and Curtis Cole has a good question here. He's questioning the if you bought it at the list price of 27.2 and sold it for 30, the entire note is what I'm assuming, and that's a 93.75% ITV. Curtis, I wouldn't even consider this if this was a note that had 2 or 3 years of seasoning. But the piece that makes this work is that it's got 178 months of seasoning. This guy has stuck with this thing, or this family has stuck with this thing for what, 15 years? So
Well,
it's
this, yep.
pretty highly the likelihood of them continuing to pay is going to be very high. So I wouldn't be so concerned about that, and I would explain that to whomever it is that I was selling this to. Okay?
Okay,
And Curtis, the other side of that could be that, I'm selling this to you because they don't know how much you paid for it. Okay? But you could sell them using one of the partials and letting them know that, I'm selling you 130 payments, so I own the back end, so I have a real interest in this thing paying as well. So, Kevin, there's three or four ways you could do this. Number one would be just to do it, use Curtis's number here, buy it for 27, retail it to somebody else, the whole note at 30. Or we could break it down and look at the different partial options. So, Curtis, the bottom line here really is that even if we, you said, okay, let me give you a higher rate of return. So we go back up to a 10 rate of return and we look at that, and then we're at 31. What if we went all the way up to a 12% rate of return? Well, we're not making much money on it. But if we change the number of months and sold the whole thing at a 12% rate of return, yeah, you see that we could. You see that your profit will be somewhere around $3,000 by doing so. they're in it, like you said, then that's based on an arbitrary BPO. If we were to look at, and I don't know what Zillow shows on this for Trulia or Redfin or Realtor.com or any of those guys, I don't know what they show. It may be 38, it may be 40. So, again, we've got an arbitrary BPO that's, you know, that, as you said, Kevin, that it's a year old or more. So, you know, that's what we've got to look at, and that's what, you know, guys, that's what we talk about being a deal architect, right? I mean, you've got to, you go through and you play with these numbers until you can find whatever it may, you know, whatever sense it makes. And obviously, if somebody says, well, gosh, I don't really, you know, I'm not really crazy about that, well, that this may not be the deal for them.
Well, okay? And so, yep, so Joe, to that point, and this also, I know Richard is on the call, and he had some questions about, you know, speaking to investors, et cetera, et cetera. Here's another component. So when we started this, I said, let's look at the math on this deal. Then we'll look at the BPO. The reason is, you've got to be able to remove yourself from the noise and look at the math. So here's what I did. When I went back and looked at this asset, I went, okay, it's got a big discount. So it jumped out at me. I liked the payment. And then I went, what do I need to know? And I need to know that it's a performing note. I need to know the story behind that. So here's what I know. This loan was modified back in 2002. I know the original note was from 2000. I know looking at Pro Title that these people became the owner of this property in 1992. I'm looking at a borrower who the probability of them leaving is going to be low. Have they had some financial problems in the past? Yes. But guys, they've been there since 1992. There, when you look at the numbers, you need to look at both types of equity. The equity is the seasoning on the note, but then to the borrower's standpoint, it's what's the emotional equity? So what is their likelihood of staying in this property and paying? That trumps, in my opinion, for this example, that trumps any issue where I'm trying to figure out an extra $1,000 or $2,000 to make my spreadsheet look better. Does that make sense?
Hey, Kevin, it makes more than sense. It makes dollars.
Okay. Yep. All right.
So I guess the number of payments don't match. I think you explained that away a few minutes ago, didn't you? And Lisa had a question as far as, you know, with SAFAC, CFPB, that kind of thing. Really, Kevin, you know, what we've found is not so much their credit, it's more the, now you're not going to just get stupid, and, you know, if they've got a 550 credit score, and they've never paid anybody in their life, obviously, you know, that's not a good play for anybody. But let's say that they can afford the payments, and they've got a 580 credit score or a 600 credit score, and you look at their credit report, Lisa, and you say, yeah, these folks are—they're not deadbeats. You know, you can see if they're a deadbeat, right? They just have never made a payment on time. But let's say we're looking at the physical report, and we versus just the score, and we see that yeah, they made every one of their monthly payments until July of 2015, and then something catastrophic happened in their lives because you can see it reflecting in their credit report. Every payment was made, somebody got sick, somebody died, somebody got a divorce, whatever it was, they couldn't make their payments. So for a year and a half, man, until, you know, December of last year, you know, they couldn't make their payments, but now they're digging themselves back out. I look at that and I go, you know, that's not really reflective of who they are. We know that bad stuff happens to good people every day. So I think that's more of the intent of the credit score versus just, you know, somebody that's never going to pay you versus somebody that has had a significant life event. So does that make sense, Kevin?
Yeah, absolutely.
And absolutely. Then, Curtis, if you will, and guys, I'm getting several questions here about the spreadsheet that I'm using. Guys, if you will email me, joe@noteschool.com, I will send you this spreadsheet, okay? joe@noteschool.com, and we'll get it to you. Okay, let's see. Krish says pay history seems to show that payments being made 10 months behind, 9, 8, 9 of 15 made 6, 23. We haven't looked at the credit, the pay history. Yep. I don't know if you want to pull that up. If you do, I can do that. I can switch.
Yeah, Krish brought up a very, very good question. And again, that's why we started this math first, because I'm trying to keep you guys in the math side, not the collateral side. And if you look in the file, you will see where, it, looking at the pay histories, it looks like they may have gotten off track and then got caught back up again. So, Krish, you are correct. There was a point where they went non-performing and then became re-performing. And I think, let's see, let me pop up the screen here again. I think there's three different pay histories in here, right?
I'm going to transfer the screen back to you, Larry.
All righty.
Okay, hold on here. Hold on. No, don't want to do that.
While you guys are doing that, guys, I'm going to do is, yep. I'm going to give you the way I will look at a lot of assets. Everybody's got their own style, so mine is not the only way to do it, but this is kind of what I do. First thing I'll do is I'll look at the view detailed payment history.
Larry, oh, you got it back. Thanks. Okay, yeah. Good. I was good. I can't see it.
Right. So what I'll do is I'll look at the view detailed payment history, and I'll work backwards. So when I look at detailed pay history, the May payment was made on the 23rd, April. So what I do is I go, okay, we're 5 months into 2017. Did they make all their payments for 2017? Then you go, okay, were they behind at all? So now I start looking at 16. So I actually mark them down and check them off, because, again, what I'm looking at is these people have been in the house a long time. I know that there was a loan modification done. And what I want to look at is I want to go, all right, what does the previous 6, 12, 18, 24 months look like? Now, I'm also factoring that all in, because I'm going, I can buy this note at a 14% yield. And with that higher yield, you know, I have to have a little more appetite for risk. If number one, there is no perfect notes. Number two, if I wanted to buy the safest note in the world, currently those notes are at 4%. So we're at 14%. So, Krish, good catch. And here's what I do. As I said, I start out just looking at the detailed payment history. Then I will go down and I will look at the April payment history. I go through the March and the February, because with this one, we've got a lot of data. And I will look in the servicing notes, because typically with these, you can go ahead and you can see the pay history. You can see it, in status of insurance, if taxes have been made, etc. You know, and like all these, you got to go in and make all the darn columns bigger, because they all show up as X's.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, not you, Larry. I laugh every time.
Oh, okay.
Right now, like if I pull up Task Manager, I've got like 12 pay histories all open, and they all look the same. They're all X's.
Got it.
And which one did you open up, April's?
Okay. This is April's, yes.
Okay. All right, so I got that. Hold on, I got March. I'll go ahead and pop it up and take a look at it. All right. And so if I look at April, what is the story? What does that tell me? Again, when you're looking at the performing notes, you're looking for what is the story of the note, and you take all the components of that note, which is the borrower, the collateral, et cetera, and the cash flow, and then you build your story. When you're talking to the investor, it's the same thing. You're taking the same components, the same due diligence that you did when you bought the note, and that's what you're giving to the investor. That's the credibility. And Joe, you and I, we were messing around where you said, hey, what if I pay him the investor 12%, where he gets 12% yield? What do I do? What does it mean? I said, you know, take it to 9. What does that mean? Et cetera, et cetera. That's all part of how you color your story. And then this is why we also provide you the page reason that we spend time working with you on how do I decipher pay histories. And remember, guys, we'll look at pay histories every day for you, okay, so that you get a better handle because it's important. With this pay history, what do we see? What's the thing that jumps out on us? And let's see, Larry, have you got it open big enough? Let's see. All right, so what do we see on this? What happened with this borrower? I see a ton of regular payments. Bam, 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 bam. What else do I see on this?
The bankruptcy?
Sure. Okay. Is the BK a deal killer? No. The BK could be a deal enhancer. Okay. By looking at this and going deeper than just going, hey, it didn't pass my ITV filter.
Right.
You're getting into the deal. And so here's the deal. These people have been in this house since 92. They've had some financial struggles. They evidently hit a bit of a bump in the road again. They did a BK. So now I want to know what kind of BK it is. I'm going to make the assumption that it's a 13, and I know that they made their payment. They made their May payment last week.
Yep.
And I know they made their April payment, you know, a month before that. So they are paying, and they're paying right about, you know, right at the middle of the month, right about at the grace period.
And, you know, interestingly enough, Kevin, is, you know, Jack Kruppy. Is Jack Gemini or Granite? I can never remember. But
Gemini.
Anyway, Jack has set up a fund that he is buying. He buys anything, anything that's in bankruptcy because it is a clear-cut process once the borrower has filed for bankruptcy as to how this thing is going to work out.
The Joe, when you're working with assets that are in bankruptcy, I'm going to use the word clearer process because the rules are black and white and everything's being done through a trustee, and the trustee is answering to the judge. So there's no fussing around.
Exactly right. And that's what Jack is doing. He's put together a fund that does just that. And Michael Rogers, look, you know, I got what you're saying. Michael's question was, you know, he doesn't want to put an investor in something that's more than 80% ITV. And I get that. And that may not be something that you would, again, it's all in being clear and transparent when you're looking at an investor. You may show him or her this note and another note and say, okay, here's the story behind this one, here's the story behind this one, which would you rather have?
Right.
And that's what you've really, you know, that's what you've really got to go through. I mean, it doesn't matter what you're paying for it. Nobody knows what you're paying for it. So it doesn't know what your cost is. So, you know, you may show what the, you know, what the other values say as we go through this. And again, we never look to see if it was, you know, what the other free sites said, or we just had a BPO, our own BPO done on this as well.
And so
it really depends on who your investor is. If your investor is a retired school teacher or, you know, somebody that really is not savvy and doesn't know anything about real estate, probably wouldn't even talk to them about doing this transaction, right? But if it's somebody that has some experience, they've been an investor for a while, and we can give them a, you know, a 10% rate of return, which we certainly can do that on this, especially with a partial, even maybe a 12 with a partial, and still make it work.
Right. So Michael's question he put up on the board is probably one of the most important ones to have everybody go back in and listen to in terms of answers. So what Michael said was, my concern in brokering this note is that selling it to an investor for, say, $30,000, blah, 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 the house is worth $32,000, I'm at an ITV that's more than 80%. So now, what Michael said was brokering the note. So he was looking at this as a whole note flip, basically, where he's going to buy it, he's going to generate some one-time fee income, and then sell it off to the investor. I love the fact that Michael put his concern there, because concern reflects what kind of strategies you're looking at. Here, this is where you go to what's the deal story? And Michael, I agree with you. There are certain investors where, you know what? I wouldn't bring this deal to them just because I know what makes them tick. And I have investors that I work with that they're 6% investors. They love 6% stuff. Just bring them 6%, 6%, 6%. I've got guys that they go, I'll take 10%, so show me a 10% yield, and that's all I care about. Or basically, it's a five-minute sell. If we want to use what I'll call Joe the widow and orphan approach, which is retired, you know, people that are retired, and you know, as a professional, we wouldn't feel comfortable putting them at risk, even though they sometimes try to talk themselves into it. You go, no, you know what? This isn't the best note for you. And again, I have other notes. Look at this one that's all.
Put somebody into something without being clearly transparent on everything that you're possibly doing. And again, that's the key to you know, working with folks like that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I think sometimes if you've got the number too high, they might think, what's wrong here? There is this some kind of a scam? It's like, you know, it's I think some people just can't realize that they actually could get that kind of yield.
But, you know, again, we always go back to risk and reward, right? I mean, if you're going to want a higher reward, then you're going to have a little more risk.
Correct.
And that's how you look at it. But, yeah, when you're looking at people that are non-investors, you know, they're not comfortable up there. I mean, yeah, they would like to think that they would, you know, love to get a 10 or a 12 or 14% return, but you know, they're probably their filter, as Eddie would say, is probably way too tight. So anyway,
sure.
All right. So what do we have? We have, let's see, John has a question here that we need to get to before we wrap this up.
Yep. Let's do that. All right, did we lose?
John Ryan, are you there?
Hello. Guys, you there?
Hey, John. Hey, John, how you doing?
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question.
Very good.
It was a good question, John. Thank you.
Okay,
go ahead.
So I don't know how you want to jump into this, but basically I was just trying to work through a couple different closing scenarios with an REO that was on the Notes Direct site. And I guess I was trying to scratch my head and see if maybe we could, instead of doing the traditional I buy the note, turn around, and this, I'm basically going to flip the note to another investor. Instead of me actually being on chain of title and going through all the hoops and closing costs, so on and so forth, why couldn't I do just like almost like a wholesaling deal or a note brokering deal, or just like we talked about in this deal beforehand, just flip the note as is, you know, to another investor using an signing assignment contract.
Hold on just a second. So is this an REO, isn't it? It's not a note, correct?
That's correct. It's an REO property.
Right.
So basically, I would have a contract with Colonial to purchase it, and then I would go to my investor with an assignment contract, and then he would sign my assignment contract, step into my shoes, and then proceed to closing. And then at closing, the fees would get divvied up. I would take my my fee, and then they would just close
so
the Colonial.
My answer to that question, and Kevin, I'll let you go next, but my answer to that question is I know that we're doing that on notes. I'm not sure if on properties, but it should be the same process.
Right. So then sure how the nuts and bolts of it, basically, how Colonial likes to see it go through.
Right. So the question is really, and I think I know where Kevin's answer is going to be as well, is you need, you know, this, you know, when you click buy, you know, NotesDirect is expecting you to buy, obviously, and to close within a timely fashion. So, you know, that would be just something that you would need to make sure that your investor is in and understand and wants to buy this asset and will close and will wire the money for this closing in a timely fashion. Is that your understanding of that, Kevin?
Yeah, and the reason that we put it on the call today is because it's a great strategy question. And at work you can use the assignment and brokering strategies for performing notes. It can work in REOs, it can work on in some cases it can work on non-performing as well. And so with John, his deeper dive was he was looking at a situation where he was trying to use his daughter's Coverdale, right, John? So, I mean, basically what you're doing, you're going, all right, how can I take like a Coverdale account or maybe an HSA or maybe even a SIDRA and use like a $100 strategy to create some tax advantage investing. So, John, the short answer is, we're willing to work with you on structuring deals. That's why we give you on NotesDirect. You can put in multiple entities, but at the end of the day, you've always got to be cognizant of the fact that you've got to be able to make sure that the end buyer is ready, willing, and able to pull the trigger, because we don't want to have a situation where people are locking stuff up, and it's not going to approved end buyer because it ties up assets.
I totally agree with that, and I would never use this strategy unless I had proof of funds. And in this case, the buyer, he says, I'm ready to close, I have funds, and just basically, where to put the escrow money? And so my specific question is, how do we do this with Colonial? Do I just set escrow through Colonial, or do I do it through another entity? Because I want him to put his money up first before anything happens.
So here's what I would do, John. I would send a note into I would send an email into Colonial, mm-hmm. and tell them what you're doing and how do they suggest that you set that up. I mean, yep. I know that we do it, you know, all the time, but how they would prefer you to do that. And I know that in some cases, you know, when you're buying in an IRA, or if you're doing an assignment, or if you're doing just something like this, it can take a few days longer. But it's all in being, you know, clear with the folks at NotesDirect and the folks at Colonial, letting them know that this is what's taking place.
Would it be similar to just flipping a performing note?
It, you know, it's no different than you know, you're buying the note for $40,000 and you're selling it to somebody else for $45,000 and they wire the $45,000 and, you know, then you're going to get the $5,000 difference. It'd be the same situation if you were buying a performing note. The thing that the folks that are taking care of that want to know is they need to know what you're doing. I know of an instance several months ago where, you know, I was talking to Susan on the phone, and Susan got a wire in for $50,000 on a note or something like that, and the asking price was $45,000. I don't remember what the numbers were, right? And she had no agreement, she had no paperwork on it. It was just $50,000 showed up in Colonial's account to buy that note, and she had no idea as to, you know, well, the price is this, and they sent this, and who are these people, and how do I take care of the $5,000 difference, and that type of thing. So you just need to communicate prior to as to what your intention is with that transaction, so that everybody's on board.
Right. So does Colonial? I guess I should ask Colonial, but would I be doing the PSA with them, or would they prefer I just
I'm thinking that you would do a, you know, it's not really going to be a purchase and sale agreement. It's really going to be a real estate, you know, not the RFPC, the receivable purchase and sale agreement. It's going to be a real estate purchase and sale agreement. and that you would you would need to have a fee agreement in place to cover the difference between what you're paying and so that Colonial would be clear as to how to allocate the funds to pay for the note.
So we need a fee agreement. Okay.
Yeah.
Right, so we need a fee agreement. Okay.
They just need to know how to direct the funds. So if you're buying it for 45 and you're selling it for 50 and they're wiring the funds in, then they need to know how those funds are allocated, that $45,000 is buying the note and the $5,000 difference is going to your IRA or, you know, whomever it's going to, or going to you personally or whatever it is. They need to know all of that up front. So that would be a communication that you would need to have with the folks at Colonial when you're doing this. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so Colonial is going to be the referee on this and kind of sort the paper. And
Exactly.
Yeah, I thought it'd be, on some of these, I thought it'd be a good way to fund this account because there's some nice little advantages to it. So.
Oh, absolutely. And it does happen. I mean, if I can name four or five people right off the top of my head that I know have done it recently, so. It's not a problem there. It's just the communication piece of that.
Terrific. Yeah. All right, great.
All right. Thanks, Sean.
All right, thanks for taking my call. Bye. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Sean. Okay. Larry, anything you need to add?
Yeah. This?
Let's see. See you in Texas. And what does that say? I'm going to make that screen long, smaller. I can see all of that.
I think you guys said Kevin and Joe are buying drinks for everyone on this call.
No. What I heard was it was going to be Kevin and Kevin. That Joe should be replaced with Kevin.
Shouldn't it be Kevin S. and Joe V. just because they're the oldest and dearest friends? I think that's how we should make this.
Regardless.
At least since she's thirsty.
Yeah. I'll buy Thursday night, seeing as how I won't be there till Friday morning, right?
Perfect.
And I think anybody would drink Friday night anyway. So, so guys, I appreciate you being on today. There will not be a call tomorrow. The Thursday non-performing that Shortell does will not be tomorrow. They'll be headed out to Summer Summit. Calls will resume, I'm assuming, on Monday of next week, and they'll be just like clockwork. Yeah, our three-day classes are there. We've got those coming up. If you want to register for any of those, you guys know how to do it. We'd love to have you come. So for those of you that I hadn't seen in a while, I look forward to seeing with you and chatting with you at Summer Summit and just kind of catching up and hanging out a little bit. So, Kevin, Moore, anything you want to add?
No, that's it. Thanks again. I appreciate everybody being so active in the call. Good questions on the panel today. And again, our whole focus was having you just look at an asset from the different angle first, you know, which is let's look at the paper side of it and then build into it from there. So, guys.
Well, you know, the other piece of that, Kevin, is that, you know, it's looking at the deal in the big picture in the deal, not just that minutia that you've got there and doing a P or an F, pass or a fail on it based on just a few different criteria. It's looking at it deep enough so that you can make a really intelligent decision for yourself and the person you're selling it to, either you're flipping it to as a full purchase or you're selling a partial to. I mean, the more you understand about the transaction and the deeper that you go into it, the better informed. Because I know the last thing that anybody wants to do is sell somebody that, you know, that has put their trust in them a bad asset. So we just want to make sure that if you get a deep enough dive on it, you'll understand all of the pieces of the transaction as we put those together. So that's it. Kevin, I'll see you in a couple days, and Larry, you as well, and everybody that's going to come to Summer Summit, we'll see you there as well. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you in a few days. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks, Joe. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, bye-bye.